The global pandemic has encouraged those who can work from home to do so, and as a result, exponentially increased the use of online conferencing platforms such as Zoom and Microsoft Teams. But how do you get the most out of working via these mediums? How do you stay professional? And are there absolute do's and don'ts that you should abide by? To help guide me through the etiquette of the online meeting, I'm joined by Nikki Richmond, Managing Partner and Head of Real Estate Finance and Banking at West End law firm Breacher. Nikki also acts as the firm's training partner and is currently developing training on working in an online environment. Nikki, great to have you join me today.
Hi, Sarah.
Thanks for your time. Can business meetings be conducted just as effectively in the online environment, do you think?
I think they can, but I think they need to be thought about, and it won't just happen without a bit of planning. I think that it is better than having a conference call, which used to be the other option to actually a face-to-face meeting, and is something of a hybrid between a conference call and an actual meeting. And so, yes, I do think it can be done as long as people understand the parameters and it's carefully organised.
And how easy is it, do you think, to actually build a rapport with people when you're talking through mediums such as Zoom and Teams?
I think it depends on your personality. I think if you're an introvert, it's more difficult. And if you're outgoing, you might find it easier. Although, actually, in a contrary manner, I found sometimes the quietest people have spoken the most over Zoom and Microsoft Teams. And some of the people that I'd expect to take over the room have been a bit quiet. So that's quite an interesting dynamic. I think it's quite easy now. I think at the beginning it was a bit shocking for people to have so much face-to-face interaction, because as human beings, we're not used to staring at people 3 foot away from each other face-to-face, and certainly not more than one person. If you're in a meeting room, there might be 6 or 7 people around the table. You can position yourself, look out the window, doodle in your pad. Actually, there is no place to hide in an online meeting. So you have to conduct yourself differently. That's why I think there's Zoom fatigue, and it's much more stressful, because I think you're using a lot more of your senses to actually be present. You're having to look at what's going on in the room. You're trying to understand the visual cues, and you're trying to do that with maybe 4 or 5 people at once, where you don't normally have to do that. If you're in a real life meeting, you're generally engaging with 1 or 2 people, and you can work around the table, and you don't have to look at everybody looking at you at the same time. You haven't got that consciousness of all the eyes on you. So I think in many ways it's harder than a face-to-face meeting.
And you mentioned reading people. How easy is it over an online platform to, for example, read someone's body language? Are people more able to hide what they're really thinking when they're sat behind a screen, do you think?
Well, I think when people are just staring at you face to face, it is quite hard to read. But I think actually they just give themselves away in other ways, because they'll be watching TV quietly because their eyes will flicker, or they'll be stroking an animal quietly, or they'll be on another machine, which is really rude. So they're actually not really in the room. That happens in bigger meetings, and you often get team meetings of, say, 10 people, and 2 or 3 of them are gaily tapping away on their laptop or desktop or whatever it is. I think that's one of the big don'ts before we come to that. So I think that people show that they're disengaged by their behaviour in the meeting. So I think it's not impossible to read body language, but I think it's harder. And it's harder to do it with more than 2 or 3 people. I think many of the issues arise when you've got more than, say, 6 people. I think 6 people to me is like an optimum number. You can work round and you can have a useful discussion. But once you get above a certain size, it becomes like a lecture and people don't feel they can jump in. And then it's much harder to manage. So we do have regular departmental team meetings, and for those I think you have to structure them in a different way. You can't have a free flow so much. You've actually got to structure it as if you were in a boardroom. And if we were in a boardroom with a meeting, we probably would all be talking over each other, but if we were running it properly, we'd have one person taking charge of the room and going round. And that's what we now do on our team meetings, we actually just go round the team room and speak to people and ask them to contribute. And it is a bit stilted, but it's the only way that people actually get heard and feel part of the meeting. The meetings that I have found very unsuccessful and decided not to do it as a firm were the many, many webinars where you've got people just talking at a group of people, which I find totally boring unless the subject matter is completely thrilling, which it rarely is. Even with good speakers, anything more than about 15 minutes, I was like, please, can I go and do my email? And at the beginning of this, there were lots of webinars where you actually went there and you could see everybody's faces. Again, that has totally changed. So when you attend a webinar now, you're blank. Then you don't know who else is in the room. You don't know how many people are there. And so I think that took a little while to work out. But I have found those larger groups very off-putting and very difficult to manage. Too much visual information going on. And I think over a certain amount of number, there shouldn't be that many faces in the room, because for the speaker, it's incredibly off-putting.
And how do you go about then nurturing relationships in an online setting? I mean, either a client that you're having to work quite closely with, or, for example, you know, someone you might be mentoring in a professional capacity.
I think you have to use all the tools at your disposal. And at the beginning of lockdown, everybody defaulted straight away to a face-to-face meeting type. So it was either FaceTime or Zoom or whatever medium, WhatsApp video. It was almost as if, oh my God, I can't see you, therefore I have to see you online. So it was an immediate, quite intrusive move to online, when actually before a phone call would have done. So I think as it's developed, people have started to ask themselves, does this need to be a Zoom call? What is the best format for this communication? So as it's gone along, I have kept in touch with my clients and people I work with in a way that suits that interaction. So for many clients, it will just be a phone call. For some people, it will be face to face. I've had a socially distanced walk. It's horses for courses. Some people really like that face to face thing because they really need that contact, and for them, it's more meaningful. And some people find it intrusive and are just gone, not one more damn Zoom, or, you know, please, can we just have a phone call? So I generally, if I'm the service provider, I've generally given my client or the person that needs my services the choice. I've said, how would you like to do this? You choose your medium, and then it's up to them. And often it's just now I find that people are more and more defaulting back to phone.
Oh, that's interesting. And I suppose just continuing from that, I suppose you have a bit of a feel for what might suit an existing client or somebody that you work with. How about an introductory meeting? Say, for example, if you're getting to know some new clients, how would you position that?
Again, it depends on the client. We had one recently where it was a new client and they wanted to introduce us to their whole team. And we had our key team and their key team, and it was just led by one person on our side and one person on their side. It was as if we were having a sort of face-to-face meeting. We'd do that over drinks, but obviously that's not available, and Zoom drinks is a whole other area. You know, it was quite formal. Again, there's different ways of doing that, and it depends on how many there are. If it's two or three, I think it's easier to make it less formal and to chat through. But it's quite artificial. It's quite artificial as a meeting, but it's the only thing we have at the moment. So we have to make it work. And it's better than just speaking to somebody on the phone. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you often get to meet more people by doing that, because sometimes when you start with a new client, you only meet two or three key people and you don't meet a whole team. I mean, I've probably met more people over this last 3 months than I would have done if I was in the office, in terms of face-to-face behind the scenes with clients, because I would normally just have email correspondence or phone calls with them. And what I've liked about this is it's actually almost, and I've said this elsewhere, it's almost rediscovering having a proper conversation with a client. So I've had much more meaningful and interesting conversations with clients, either on the telephone or through Zoom, because you're in their home as well. So if it's a Zoom, it's very personal. You're often seeing their kids or their animals walk across the screen, or, you know, whatever it is. And certainly at the beginning, people did just want to talk. They just wanted that human connection. So I feel I've got to know some people better in the last 3 months than I would have done in a conventional setting where I might just go out for a lunch with them or a breakfast or go to their office for a meeting. So it's broken down that barrier quite quickly. But I do think there are people who are good at that. And then I think there are people who are horrified by that, mm-hmm. who are very private, who don't want to actually engage on Zoom. I have, you know, it splits quite easily between the people who are really comfortable doing this face-to-face thing and the people who would rather have their nails pulled out and really don't want to do it at all and find it intrusive, and people that don't really even like the phone. They're the challenging people in this market. So with them, for me, it's just sending a little email or a text every now and again, just going, I'm here if you want to chat, understand, just make sure everything's okay. They just want that sort of, it's like a keeping warm. So they don't want something totally different from what they had before. And the people that come to Zoom and are very friendly, and the clients who want all those Zoom drinks, they're easy because they're open to it. But it's the hard thing is remembering who's not on that Zoom call, who you haven't heard from. So I've been going through my sort of client and contact list and thinking, oh, it's been a little while since I've heard from that person. I always start with a text just going, how are you? Fancy catching up? And I don't say by Zoom or whatever. And then we'll sort of take it from there.
Thinking then about achieving the same level of professionalism when you're working through these mediums, what are the do's and don'ts, do you think, of actually connecting on the online platforms?
I think you have to remember that you are giving a professional service, and it depends, again, on your industry. In my industry, I think it's important to give that advice in a professional manner, to look the part as well. So again, at the beginning of lockdown, everybody was in completely casual. Everybody was having Zoom calls from all over the place. And we were all, you know, everybody just, it was so new that there were no rules. But I think it's gone back to being a little more structured than it was. So I wouldn't expect to see one of my partners giving advice in, you know, beachwear or topless in a garden, because it's male or female. I think it just needs to be appropriate and smart casual. So we don't have a very formal dress policy in the office. I'd expect them to look similar, especially if it was a formal call or a call with somebody they didn't know well. I would expect them to be wearing something that person on the other side isn't going to think, what the hell are they wearing? Are they a lawyer? You know, so I just want them to look the part, which doesn't mean dressing up. It just may mean a plain blue sweater or a smart t-shirt or just something appropriate. Likewise, I think as lockdown has gone on, there has been, and I'm going to say something sexist and dreadful here, a marked difference between the way that men present themselves and the way that women present themselves, some men, who have just taken it as an opportunity to pretty much go feral. So hair is all over the place. There are straggly, dreadful beards or not shaving. And it's not always a good look. Some people look great, but I think you just have to accept that you're in a professional environment. You're not on holiday. You're not on a sabbatical. You actually have to make a bit of an effort. You know, I always make sure that if I'm speaking to clients that I look as they expect me to look. And that's how I would normally look in the office. I don't want them to think, oh my God, she's let herself go. The other thing is I'm having to look at myself in a Zoom. So I don't want to look at myself looking dreadful, because again, that's going to put me off.
And thinking then about your environment, I've been on various calls and people have various different backgrounds. Some people might choose to blur the background, or you might view in someone's home, as you mentioned before, there might be a pet or a child coming in. I mean, how important is the background?
Again, I think it depends who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. I think if you're having a team meeting and it's your internal team, I think it's actually nice to be some of your authentic self. So yeah. They can see your home, they can see you, they know who you are anyway, and you can be a bit more relaxed. That's absolutely fine. But I think for a client, I don't want a client judging me by my background. I don't want to have some jokey name on my thing or my kid's name on my thing. You know, make an effort. You want it to be you. you know, because I happen to be using an iPhone. I think that you have to make an effort to present yourself in a professional way. And I still have colleagues who I can only see half their face, or they've got the light behind them and I'm basically looking at a silhouette, or their bandwidth isn't good enough. I have every sympathy with people who don't have a separate room, who have to share an office, or, you know, have to work in their kitchens. 100%, I have every sympathy with that. But you can blur your background in that situation. And I think with client meetings, you should. You know, I do have every sympathy with people with kids who don't have separate rooms. I will, you know, 100% understand that that is very difficult. So these apply to people in a very privileged position like me, who I can go into a separate room and have a quiet and sensible conversation without clutter in the background giving me away. I don't want it to look messy. I don't want it to look personal. If it's clients, exactly the way that I'm looking at you, Sarah, and you've got a very neutral background. Nothing is getting in the way of our conversation. The same me, I've got a window behind me. Nothing is getting in the way of our conversation. And that's the way it should be.
Thinking then about the type of conversation that you have in an online environment, we've talked about the professional aspect and how you might sort of deal with the client side. What about the informal side of professional life? I mean, how do you recreate a coffee or a drink or the more sort of social getting to know one another side of things?
I'm probably not the best person to ask, but there are people I know who do it very well. We do have client drinks with clients we know, and it's completely optional, and some want to do it and some don't want to do it. So when it's drinks, it may be at 5 o'clock. And again, one of the things that I've learned is you need to set times for these things. Otherwise, nobody wants to be the first to leave and feels really awkward. And people have not got to feel like they can't say, actually, I've got something else I need to go. People are better at that now than they were at the beginning. At the beginning, it was very open ended, and sometimes they went on for 2 hours. So I think there are people, I've got people who I've known for a very long time who are comfortable with each other, where we can sit effectively in each other's homes and have a drink and just have a chat about what's going on. But you have to know the client quite well for that. So that goes on quite a lot. There have been other people in my firm have done regular sort of get-togethers with the same people or the same group of people invited every week who are all in different industries, who are all of like mind, and it's pretty much social, a little bit of business chat, just what's going on in the market, but then it'll just be personal. And actually, they've really got to know each other and bond over that time, because they, whilst they used to go out for a lunch, that lunch may have happened once every 3 months. This meeting is happening once a week. It's been a really bonding thing. So I think for the people who like that, it's been really useful. For our teams, in our internal teams, it's been really vital, because we have a weekly social. So we have a departmental formal meeting on a Monday, which is not optional. And then we have an optional drinks, which most people come to, and our furlough staff come to as well when they want to. And that's just chit chat about what you're doing at the weekend, who's doing what. It's very informal. But you know, it's not the same as going out for a drink. It's not the same as having a quick coffee, but it's the best that we've got at the moment. So I don't think there's a magic formula. And I think a lot of it just depends on the bodies in the room. You've got to have somebody that drives it.
Yeah.
And it's got to have some structure. So I think you actually have to make an effort with it and prepare some things to talk about. If you're the leader or the host, that you can't just sort of free flow it, because then you get, you know, tumbleweeds of silence going on, and everybody goes, oh, I have to go now. and it goes, and I've been in those as well. So that's made me realise that, you know, I have to prepare a little bit as well and have a few questions ready or a few things to talk about myself so that there are no awkward silences. But there have been drunk Zooms, not me personally, where I know that certain people have gone a little bit too far. And so I think that can happen as well, not to be encouraged. Understandable as well.
One of the other things I've noticed just from being at home is you don't have that opportunity to sort of bump into someone in the kitchen, and you might have a sort of informal, you know, conversation, exchange of ideas. How do you recreate that? I mean, you've mentioned you've got a structure in place for some of the more informal conversations and to have a coffee and a catch up. But how do you go about having a more informal exchange of ideas?
I think you can't recreate the water cooler moment because that's spontaneous. You just can't do that. As a leader of the department, what I do is I just phone people or text them and just say, if you want to catch up, let's have a chat. And we just have a broad ranging discussion about what's going on. Yeah. For example, on the training side, it's clear that we can't do some of the training that we would have done. So I said, OK, we're in lockdown. What training can we do? What can we actually do of the things that we were meant to do this year, and how can we do them? So I think that water cooler moment is very difficult to recreate in this environment. But the only way to do it is to be active and actually just pick up the phone and just say, look, we are going to chat. Even, because I think that the issue, especially for lawyers, is that they will just sort of close in on themselves, a lot of them, and just get used to not talking to people, especially if they're not client facing. So it's really important. That's why I started doing the training again online, to actually get them talking to each other, to get them used to just chit chatting, because the training that I do is cross departmental. It's just at different levels of qualification in the firm. And often they haven't spoken to each other unless they happen to be friendly. So they haven't seen their peer group. So for me, it was important to actually put something in place where they could actually see their peer group on a regular basis. And we're starting to do that much more. And I've reinstated the training programs that we're actually going to have our external speakers come back in and do all that. So I'm just trying to make it as normal as possible. And I think that's all I can do. I mean, if you've got any magic tips about that, I'd love to.
I suppose one of the things I was going to ask is whether, you know, there is a danger for perhaps some of the more junior staff members that, because they're not actually, you know, physically next to someone and perhaps observing how somebody perhaps handles something or perhaps is listening to, you know, a telephone conversation and how they actually sort of deal with a particular person or a problem or how they might approach something. Is there a danger that people do miss out on some of that learning that you would just sort of pick up on day to day?
Absolutely right, which is why I think just being an online law firm is not feasible or a good idea. I think we will end up being a hybrid of people who work from home a bit and who come into the office. And for juniors, I think it's more important for them to come into the office more than senior people because of exactly those things, because there are things that you absorb without realizing you're absorbing them. How to speak to clients, how to speak to other people, how to juggle, you know, all the responsibilities when you've got the internal client and the external client. Also, you know, from a senior's point of view, supervision, you can't hear what they're saying on the telephone. You know, I can look at their written work, but you can't hear a phone call and think, oh my God, you know, as soon as they're finished going, actually, you can't say that. We need to phone them back, which, you know, does happen, but not that often. So, I mean, I was thinking actually for that, depending on how long lockdown goes, or if we're locked down again, that I was going to actually suggest that for some of the juniors that they're brought in to Zoom conversations with clients so they can actually sit in like they were sitting into a meeting, because otherwise they're going to not have that skill. They're not going to learn that thing that they would learn if they were actually in a physical meeting. But I do think there's a lot for them. They are going to have to learn this as a method of communicating, because I think this isn't going away. Actually, I think this is going to be part of our toolkit going forward. This face-to-face online thing, it will run side by side our existing toolkit.
And I suppose just then thinking about the future, you mentioned as a sort of blended approach going forward and adopting some of the practices from now. How do you think that could be best packaged up to move forward into the office environment of the future?
I don't have a clear plan about that. We're working on that at the moment. I do think that it's actually a positive thing that we have this tool, because I think it's better than telephone in terms of making initial contact with clients. And I actually think it will allow us, I think because it's become normalised, there are lots of clients who are all around the country that we never usually see. We will actually get to see them because it will be normal to do so in that situation. So I think that will be very helpful. I also think that it will enable us to actually recruit lawyers from a much wider area than we do at present, because if they don't have to come into London 5 days a week, then actually that's a real game changer. So I think that that's a really interesting area for us, looking at recruitment from a wider pool than we would normally look at.
Yeah.
In terms of packaging it up for the future, I think that we will have protocols around the use of Zoom and around the use of online media that will become an industry norm. I think it's such early days, and I think there will just be some things that just become second nature and normal, and there'll be certain meetings that are always held like this, and I think that that's a good thing. So I think it's a positive addition to the working environment. I have got used to it now. I think a lot of people have got used to it. I don't want to use it where it's not necessary, but I think certainly it's better than a conference call, which is very, very disengaging and dull. Not as good as a face-to-face meeting, but actually a different thing. I think you shouldn't compare it. It's like sort of cats and dogs. It's a different animal altogether. And the behaviour in it and the language and the culture of it is different. And we will have to work out the best way of using it. And I think we're still doing that.
Nikki Richmond, thank you very much indeed for sharing your thoughts with me today. It's been a really interesting conversation.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Bricks and Mortar with Sarah Jackman. For more on developing a career in real estate, see the archive of the Bricks and Mortar series at podbean.com and the archive at egi.co.uk.